Colonel Evans Loam, Reel 2. Colonel, when was it that you first got vehicles in the regiment?
I think it was 1928 when the French had always wanted to have a cavalry exercise through the Eifel up to Aachen. The Germans didn't like this. However, to reinforce the French, one British cavalry regiment, which was the 8th Hussars, was sent to join in this. It was known that there'd be long marches every day, between 70 and 90 miles a day, except Sundays. And to assist us, I think we were given a troop, that's four Austin 7 mini cars.
And what sort of things were you doing with the cars? What sort of?
They were used largely for reconnaissance, and as the distances were so long, it was a tremendous test of the horses, and the French regiments got into rather difficulties. They were amazed. The officer who was attached to our regiment was amazed that we shaved each day and ran a mess. The French officers apparently just didn't shave and used the phrase sailor manoeuvre and didn't have messes and didn't eat properly. And they were quite amazed at our procedure. We were the reserve regiment in a French brigade in which the brigadier was being tested for his capabilities. And quite wisely, he didn't use the foreign regiment when he was being tested. However, the French commander-in-chief knew we were there and asked what we had done, and the brigadier had to say nothing. So he said, well, you must use them. So he gave us an enormous area to reconnoiter, which would get us well out of the way. And we had a French-speaking officer, Lord O'Neill, who got the orders very carefully and carried out the reconnaissance. After about 4 hours, we gave the brigadier the reply, at which he flew into rather a rage, saying we couldn't possibly have done it in the time. He didn't know we had these Austin cars, which we'd used to save our horses. However, the French commander-in-chief assured him that the information was correct, and from then on, we led the advance for this French brigade.
So it was an early case in the regiment's history of use of cars, being able to...
It was the first time we'd used cars to save the horses.
And in fact, save time as well.
And save time. At the time, I was the regimental billeting officer and managed to get a motorbike and sidecar and used to go on to arrange the billeting before the people got in.
At this time, did you see the tank corps, the development of the tank corps, as some sort of threat to the regiment?
No, I can't remember anything about that. No, I don't think we were thinking of tank corps in those days. Nor do I remember tanks in Germany.
When you had these Austin cars, who was it that was in fact given them to drive them and use them?
Oh, men of the regiment who could drive, and others were taught to drive.
Yeah.
In a cavalry regiment, most people had money, and all the officers had cars, and so their batmen learnt to drive cars.
What was your reaction?
For instance, I used to go hunting in York, and as adjutant of the regiment at the time, my servant rode out with a horse. I stayed on working, motored out, went hunting, and my batman drove the car back to barracks.
So everybody was perfectly familiar with the driving.
So we had people who understood driving.
What was your reaction? You've been given these cars, but what was your reaction to hearing that the 11th Hussars and the 12th Lancers were being mechanised in the late 20s?
We were really rather shocked, I think, at the time. We knew the 11th Hussars very well, but they went into armoured cars, which we thought were more dangerous than tanks.
Why was that?
They're lighter armed. Whereas, in fact, through the war in Egypt, the 11th Hussars had many less casualties than my own regiment that eventually had tanks and had tremendous casualties.
Did you feel in any way that this was the beginning of the end for the horse cavalry?
Well, it could have been, but we didn't really worry. We were horsemen and we were only interested in horses.
You didn't think, well, this is going to happen eventually to us or quickly to us? Or
No, it took some years. The 11th and 12th Hussars and 12th Lancers were armoured cars for quite a number of years before the rest of us had to take to armoured vehicles.
What extent do you think was sort of cavalry's attachment to horse? Was it based on sentiment, or was there other factors involved in it?
Oh, genuine love of horses. People show jumped, rode races, played polo. Genuine love of horses.
But did you also see that it had a role in a future war?
What, horses? Mm. I don't think I ever thought that deeply.
How much sort of advance notice did you get in the 8th Hussars that you were to be mechanised?
I don't think more than 4 or 5 months. And we were not mechanised all at once. I personally had the last horse squadron, and the horses were sent to India, and we were given a miscellaneous lot of old cars to learn from breakdowns all about the internal combustion engine.
And where were you at the time when you heard this news?
We were in Cairo.
What was the sort of general reaction to it?
Oh, well, it had come then. We were to be armoured vehicles. But again, we weren't even armoured cars. We were in Ford V8 trucks, open trucks, not armoured at all, each with a machine gun, 4 men, 3 days' rations, and 300 miles of petrol.
What was your opinion of those Ford V8s?
Marvellous cars, marvellous in the desert, and of course it made life quite different, but really far, far more easy and comfortable than it had been before.
Was there much active or passive resistance to the mechanisation when it occurred?
No, I don't think so. I think people who were dedicated soldiers realised that it had to happen. And the rest of the people knew that they could just withdraw.
And were there people who withdrew?
Well, generally, when a regiment went abroad, whatever branch of the service, a certain number of people with interests in UK didn't go abroad. When we went abroad, 3 or 4 officers left.
But nobody left specifically over mechanisation?
No, that was, you see, in other words, we'd had a clean out just 2-3 years before we were actually mechanized.
What about the reaction in other ranks and the NCOs? What was their reaction to the news?
I think most of them were probably happy. In the ranks, the same as with the officers, there were people who were far more dedicated to horses than to vehicles, and they didn't like the idea. Whereas other men, horses are really hard work, feeding morning, noon and night, sentry guards on them at night, grooming. The work was far, far easier.
And with a mechanization? Yeah.
Yes, with cars.
How long did this process take, in fact, of mechanizing the regiment?
It's difficult to know exactly what you mean by mechanization. I would call mechanization when we understood a car and could keep it going, unless there was a major part broken. Then we were able to carry out our cavalry role. Against that, mechanization could be keeping going heavier vehicles. When we got into tanks, we'd far more trouble knowing what bogs we could cross, and we paid a great deal of attention to looking at various types of herbs and things to show that the ground was likely to be boggy and a tank sink, whereas a Ford V8 car and balloon tires wouldn't.
By that mechanization, then, I meant the process at the beginning when you were issued with, when you lost your horses and were given the Ford.
Well, all the officers owned cars, so knew a fair amount about internal combustion engine. It was a matter of teaching the men and going over the old ground for the officers, getting them knowledge more at their fingertips.
Well, did you have to run courses for teaching people how to?
Yes, the 11th Hussars ran officer courses, NCO courses and other rank courses for some months, and helped us when we first went out into the desert.
And how did you find their help? Were they of great assistance?
Oh yes, they were our great friends at all ranks, all levels.
What sort of course did you do? What sort of thing? You mentioned that they'd ran courses for
officers.
Yes.
Well, the internal combustion engine. That was all.
Was it a theoretical course, that, or did you do practical exercises?
Oh no, all practical. All practical. Practical lectures, and then took a machine to pieces.
Would you say that most officers were able to cope with that, this
oh,
big
yes,
change?
Oh yes, all were. All were. They were all calm-minded, really.
And what about the other ranks? Did they cope with that as well?
Oh yes, I think some were very enthusiastic and became excellent motor engineers.
What about the distribution of the cars within the regiment? How was it split up in comparison with the way you'd organise your horses?
Exactly the same. Squadrons and troops. At times they altered the number of troops in a squadron to save expense over the whole thing to make the regiment smaller. But it was exactly the same. Either three or four squadrons, each with three or four troops.
Were you, for example, issued with your own car, which you kept, were you?
Oh, yes. Everybody kept their own cars. The troop cars belonged to that troop. All belonged to belonged to the squadron. And in fact, when we put dazzle paint on the cars, my squadron, I always had the dazzle paint in a certain way so that I knew my cars at a long distance.
Was there sort of a rivalry within the regiment to keep up appearances of the cars and also keep them mechanically up to scratch?
No more than in the horse days. In the horse days, Everybody was very critical of the horses of the other squadron. And in the Cardets, the thing was exactly the same. And cavalry standards was real spit and polish. In a cavalry regiment, one always looked at the other squadron's horses and were very critical about them. And when we had cars, it was exactly the same. The cavalry standard of spit and polish was very, very high.
What would you say would be the main problem that you'd encountered in this big turn, this big change that took place from horses to cars?
To my mind, it was surprisingly little. All our tactics of reconnaissance, surprise, and things were the same on horses or motors. With the motor, if you ran out of petrol, you came to stop at dead stop. You had to forever have your eye on your petrol and know where your next petrol was coming from. As long as you had that, you could do anything.
Did you, with the 11th Hussars, do any tactical work, exercises with them?
Only brigade schemes, yes. We did brigade schemes in Egypt with the infantry and with the other regiments.
What would be the role that you play in that, with the cars?
Well, in the first place, the long-distance reconnaissance would be done by the 11th Hussars. Closer reconnaissance on infantry positions and things were done by the cavalry.
And in that thing, what actually would you be doing when you say that?
Pinpointing the enemy and their machine guns and reporting it to the infantry.
And did you find it easier to do that with cars? Than
oh
with
yes,
horses?
Much easier. Easier. A horse is a restless animal and you try to ride with a horse reins through your arm, it wasn't very easy.
So would you say overall that you were rather glad you got the cars when eventually they came and they've been established that you got them and you were using them?
I don't think any horsemen were ever glad of getting cars. But the cars were far easier than when we were working with horses.
What was the main mechanical difficulties that you met with those Fords in the desert and things?
Well, they were surprisingly good. The Ford V8 cars had twin carburetors, and they were surprisingly good. The only trouble I really remember is a broken fan belt now and then, or a tire burst.
Did the 11th Hussars, when they trained you, did they train you in some of the ways in which they had developed the use of vehicles in the desert?
Yes, because the desert... is you have soft sand patches, and then you've got to have drills for getting out of soft sand patches and for recognizing them and so on.
Did you, at this time, did you start to receive wireless training, the use of wireless, or did you have somebody in from the Signal Corps?
No. When wireless came, it was with the cars. I don't remember any wireless with horses. And we all did courses, and it wasn't all that difficult. I don't know that I did much. I'd been a signal officer in the horse days and knew a fair amount about signaling.
What was your... the way in which you communicated by horse, did this alter when you had the cars? Were there major changes?
Yes. In 1922, I think it was, we were in Cairo and starting to air, to communicate with horse regiments, and we each carried between four horsemen a sign. Ours was a triangle and others was a square to show the air which actual regiment it was. That was my first memories of communicating with others. The wireless didn't come in until we had cars. And as I said, it wasn't a great hardship to talk on it. Mostly done by officers and sergeants. Or the signal troop.
When did you actually have the signal troop? When did they actually arrive?
We always had signalers in the horse days, a signal troop for helio, flags, and we had a thing called a fuller phone in the First War, which was used in the trenches.
And that section was staffed by the Royal Corps of Signals?
No, ordinary cavalrymen.
But where had they got the training to use that? They'd gone to courses, had they?
Yes. I was signal officer of the regiment for a time. I was also a signal officer of the cavalry brigade for a time.
Did you go in any special courses with the Royal Signal?
Yes. I went to a special course at Pourville and one in England. Two courses on signalling.
In the process of mechanisation, did any officers go to Bovington for training?
Tremendous numbers, and NCOs.
On what basis were they sort of selected to go? Were there any special selection?
They'd have a course of 20, and they'd give so many to each regiment. And you filled your courses. That was a normal procedure throughout the army with all the courses in musketry and horsemanship and so on.
Did you in fact develop any special sort of expeditions in the desert yourself? Or take part?
Oh yes, during our training we were allowed to we planned a scheme in the desert and then got permission from the regiment and brigade to carry it out. And this I was very keen on. And one of my most ambitious ones was to go from Cairo to an oasis called Far Afra, in 1937, I think it was. And General Hobart was out there at the time, and I was very distressed because he eventually said, no, you must go and recommend Noita the Alamein line instead of going to this oasis. And I never got to Far Afra, but I did reconnoitre the Alamein line in 1937, the southern end of it.
But it was quite common, was it, to go off on these sort of expeditions to...
Yes, when we were learning, we used to go down to hot springs through the desert and have all kinds of breakdowns to learn how to keep going.